Welcome to the IM Radio Network, where noted authority coaches, authors, and speakers collaborate and bring to you the best in radio, TV, and live events worldwide. And now, the IM Radio Network proudly presents the Dr. Simone Show with your host, Dr. Simone Reves. Get ready to go. Interactive.
Hi, this is Dr. Simone, and this is the Dr. Simone Show, the Mind-Body Edge. Welcome to today's show. I'm really glad that you decided to join us. And I'll be talking today with a wonderful guest. I think you're going to really find out a lot of interesting information and cause for thought. But first, let me tell you a little bit about this show. At the Mind Body Edge, we speak of things involving human behavior, health, life experiences, consciousness, the changeable brain, and the like. These issues are vital for us to uncover and discuss because they can educate us, heal us, help us grow, and improve the condition of humanity and the planet as a whole, or so we intend. Briefly, just a little bit about me for those of you who are just tuning in. In my former life, I was a clinical psychologist and also worked in the corporate world for some years. And at present, for the past 5 years, I've been working as a certified business and life coach and a brain coach. I am absolutely fascinated by neuroscience, and you'll see that a number of our shows are dedicated to that topic. But I'm also interested in the mind-body functioning as a whole. I knew since I was quite young that I wanted to help others and work with others. I was very fortunate in that way, knowing so early what it was that I felt my life purpose was. And unfortunately, I got a little bit waylaid on this side. I was born with two older brothers and two parents, all of whom were very high-achieving and very intelligent. And then I came along as the youngest one, and I felt that I couldn't keep up. I couldn't do the same things they could do. And so what did I tell myself? Something that we do quite often. I engaged in negative thinking, and I told myself that the reason was I was stupid, and that's why I couldn't do the things that they could do. So to counteract that, because I certainly didn't want to believe that, I became a complete type A personality and a perfectionist. And I drove myself so hard in working in the business world, which is not what I had wanted to be doing at all, that I became severely, severely ill and actually came close to death on two occasions. After that, it took a long time to heal and recover, but I worked with a brain expert and studied Eastern and Western modes of healing, and I got my life back together amidst major changes in the way that I thought and in practicing mindfulness meditation and really rebalancing my life and having a different attitude. So for now, this is what I'm doing, the radio show and coaching, and I speak, and I've written a number of books. And I'm very proud to be here today because I think that, as I said, that you're all going to learn a lot of really interesting information. My guest today is Stephen Memel. He's the world's leading authority on performance mastery through what he calls the five stages of ultimate performance. Stephen is the creator of and the energy behind the Science of Switching On Ultimate Performance Training System. From his beginnings as an award-winning actor, director, composer, vocalist, dancer, and producer, just a few things there, Stephen grew his coaching practice to include an extensive list of A-list Hollywood celebrity clients whom he's helped to achieve their greatest performances on film, concert, stage, and in the studio. Adam Levine, Drew Barrymore, and Justin Long are just a few of those with whom he's worked. But performing artists aren't the only professionals taking advantage of Stephen's original coaching and training systems. Executives, entrepreneurs, credentialed experts, and top influencers worldwide rely on him to hone and refine their skills, delivery, and presence. They want to know that whether in front of an audience of thousands, a high-pressure boardroom presentation, on video, or in a critical client meeting, they'll deliver on the money with confidence, self-assurance, and comfort, guaranteed they'll be at their best when it matters the most. So now I'd like to welcome Stephen Memel. Stephen, are you there?
Thank you, Dr. Simone. I am indeed. I was listening to all that great story of yours, which I hadn't heard beforehand.
That's really fascinating. Thank you. I am so pleased to have you here today. I've really been looking forward to it. I think this is going to be one that the audience really remembers and enjoys, definitely.
Wonderful. Well, I've been very excited about it as well. And, you know, I have to jump in, if I may, for one quick second, because
one of the things
you said in telling your story is something that I think is so common. Is so common, which is almost like a disease in our culture of underestimating ourselves. Because the word stupid is exactly what I thought I was growing up, because of the input, the negativity that was coming my direction, the lack of the kind of support that I think more, unfortunately not all, but more young people get as they're growing up.
Right.
But it's a really terrible feeling to feel like you don't measure up, and to believe that your brain is not sufficient, and therefore you're not sufficient. So I congratulate you on overcoming that. I feel blessed to have made that journey myself, and thank God for brain plasticity.
Oh, absolutely. And you know what was so bizarre is that I actually did receive a lot of support and positivity reinforcement from my family, and I actually also had strong, hard evidence in terms of my performance being really good, but to tell you how strong the subconscious negative thinking is, those factors didn't make a dent in my self-belief.
Right. I get that. I was several years ahead of myself in school. I went to college when I was 15, thought I was stupid until my 20s.
Yeah, it's just the evidence doesn't even really convince
us.
It doesn't matter. Right.
But you know, there's a message in that. Mm-hmm. And there's a message that we can look at when we study anything. And as a coach, it's something that's a problem that people run into all the time. And I bet a tremendous amount of the listeners today are running into this problem. And some of you who are listening don't even know that you're the victim of it.
Right.
And are you ready for what that is?
Yep.
Okay. Well, what the problem is the kind of platitudes and pat answers that people give you about these sorts of things, like, oh, come on, you're really smart. Well, you know, that's just setting up a resistance against your belief. It generally doesn't get into what's the root of that experience. And
Well,
how do you measure this against that? And certainly, you know, as a vocal coach, which, you know, besides the performance stuff, I still love to work with some of these artists. I have an artist who's performing this Sunday night at Staples Center.
Great.
But one of my biggest games is if I do a lecture for singers on vocal production, I ask how many people have been told to breathe or speak or whatever from their diaphragm. And I'm sure you can imagine every hand in the room goes up, right?
Right.
And I don't care. I've done this in the room of 1,000 or more people. And then the next question I'll ask is, how many people can show me where their diaphragm is and tell me how it functions? Nobody. I mean, maybe one or two people know, and they've usually taken some kind of medical class or something. So there's two things wrong there. One, if it is so important, why are the people who are teaching it not making it clear and not making sure you really understand? And the second thing is, why are we standing there and nodding dutifully when we don't understand?
Right, right.
Interesting questions, exactly. Aren't they?
Good question. Have to present the appearance that we know. We are
right.
Probably feeling insecure about admitting that we don't know something. Because what does that mean?
Right.
That means we're stupid.
That's
right?
Exactly it. There's something wrong with us. If we
something
don't
wrong with us, right.
Yeah. And the coaches themselves, sometimes they don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes people forget when they've achieved something what the absolute beginning days were where nothing was known.
Right.
And you have to go back to roots always, or as Coach John Wooden would say, fundamentals.
Mm-hmm.
And that's always it. So I'm sure you understand the idea behind this.
Oh yeah, but, yeah. I mean, when I'm working with helping people change those negative beliefs, I have them recall, if they're thinking, for example, I'm a failure, I have them recall all the times that they actually succeeded at something. And just focus on those and repeat those in the brain and keep doing that so that they can change their neural pathways in their brain.
Right, because they're now changing their story,
right.
Which is, you know, the whole school of thought of narrative psychology, where it isn't about things, it's about the meaning we give things,
right.
The story we tell ourselves. There's a wonderful book written many, many years ago called The Now Habit, and it was one of the big don't procrastinate books that became very, very popular. And I actually pulled it off the shelf the other day because there's a couple of things I remembered from it that I really wanted to hold again. One is the reframing. He starts out by saying everybody doesn't procrastinate somewhere, right?
Right.
It may be getting to the fridge and pulling out the ice cream. It may be
right.
Turning on your favorite show.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So there are places in our lives, everybody, multitudes of them, where we don't procrastinate. So that, you know how Scooby-Doo goes, whoa,
yeah.
You know, turns the head.
That's
what that kind of a thought does for people. It disrupts the idea that they are only a procrastinator.
Right. Right.
Oh,
that sounds like
so
a great.
I find that a really cool thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Stephen, we're sitting here talking about thinking, and we know that our thoughts largely dictate our behavior and our performance. And you being a performance expert, I'd like to ask you what you think performance. How do you define that? What does that mean to you?
That's a very interesting question, and one that I have fun with at seminars that I teach. Performance, if you look at it, is really just how we execute on things, how things are doing, you know, how they are performing. Stocks perform. Teams perform. We have KPIs. Key performance indicators, analytics for social media.
Mm-hmm.
There is a performance, how something is doing. But if I just write on a whiteboard, the word performance or performer, and everybody's context of me is that I come from the entertainment industry, I point at it and I ask, fake or real? Fake or authentic? Fake, you know, is the answer.
Right.
And I put actor, fake. And then I put role, oh, fake, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, who's the top performer at your company? Don't you believe in taking action always? What role do you play on your team? And what's funny and interesting to watch is the lights go on in
right.
people's eyes. And we're talking smart people. So putting the two together, it's like, I never thought of those two things being the same word.
Yeah, that's funny.
So that's really the answer to your question, how we essentially execute on anything.
Right.
And is it doing what we need it to do, or do we need to shift, hone, refine, change performance?
Right, right. And that's a major part of your work. Is
yes.
helping people decide if they do and then how to do it, correct?
Correct. That's a, right. That's right.
Okay.
And
okay.
the first element is always awareness, because we're ruled by patterns.
Mm-hmm.
If we really were aware of all the patterns, we would be very frightened because we're less in control than we realize. Because
oh, absolutely.
Yeah. I, you watch that probably every day in your work.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yes.
And,
I mean, people come in with patterns that they're unaware of, and the first step is helping them become aware of them.
Right.
And then the need is, you know, to change them. But what I'm thinking about is you mentioned how ruled by habits we are, that 95% of our behavior is determined by our subconscious.
Correct.
And that the reason for that, the reason for most of the fact that our behavior is habitual is energy conservation for our brain.
Mm-hmm.
Our brain,
yep.
when it has to consciously think, is expending so much energy. So as often as possible, it learns how to do actions and how to feel and so on, patterns, and then they go into the subconscious, and that uses up much less energy.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah.
And I sometimes, we're completely on the same page about that. I sometimes refer to it as a survival mechanism. How
yes.
do you survive if you had to carry every action you did in your puny little frontal cortex?
Right.
You know?
Right.
Which only controls 5% of our mental processing. The example I have fun with using when I speak is if, you know, when you get out of the shower in the morning, and if you pay attention, you'll notice that you dry off in the exact same order every day.
Mm-hmm.
Every day. And most people have never thought of that. And when they do, they go, oh, I guess I do.
Right.
That's weird.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and like you said, it's energy conservation. And also even an additional element of the amount of sensory input our body is able to receive. There's so much more sensory input and data out there
right.
than we're capable of processing. We have
absolutely.
To reduce things, you know.
Yes, absolutely. Let's take a little shift here. And I'd like to ask you about your science of switching on.
Yes.
What can you tell us about that?
Well, the science of switching on came about from some observations I made when I was a young performer, and I was doing, as you made that list, so many different arts. And I became aware of the fact that though there was a different medium I was working with, dance or piano or singing or acting, whatever that may be, they're all different mediums. But the principles of being able to achieve my best remain consistent. As in no matter where you go, there you are.
Right.
And there was a very severe problem that I suffered from. And I think many people who end up in the helping arts go through things that they then come out of and want to share with others so that that others don't have to suffer at least the degree, if not any, of the pain that has been suffered by themselves. But I would go into auditions, and there were times that I would go in, and I was very good, all right? And so there were times when I'd go in, and none of the stuff would come up that was the negative stuff, and I would kill it, and I'd get things like, oh my God, how come I haven't heard of you? And, and then, the next time I might go in, and English wasn't the second language. It might have been a close third or fourth, but I couldn't talk. I literally was the meltdown king.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because right now I'm working with the CFO of a company that's going to be bringing in $200 million this year. Mm-hmm. And he has to do these quarterly off-site meetings where there's several hundred people and supporting at the company and all that. And yesterday we were working and we've been making tremendous progress. And there's a thing I call the quickening, which I will get to in a minute.
Sure.
But he had some experiences and he went, yes, and he was trying to describe them. And he said, yes, and by the grace of God, when I am able to get there, it feels really good. And I said, funny you should say that, because that's exactly or almost precisely the phrase I used when I was in that horrible, being trapped inside myself feeling when I was a young performer. I felt like if the hand of God touched me that day, I could go in and be who I had the potential to be. And if God didn't decide to bless me that day or grace me using his word, I was a basket case.
Mm-hmm.
And that sent me into a great depression, because when we feel, it's kind of like people who have a disease, even if it's bad, they have an issue, a physical issue or a health issue, even if it's bad news, they generally feel better if it gets a name, because now they know what they're dealing with, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right? As human beings, we need context. But in that situation, I didn't have a clue. I felt so at risk, and it made every next time worse and worse and worse. And I had to do something about it. So I went into, I was always studying spirituality. I was always studying psychology, performance, movement, voice were some things that I had expertise in that's kind of not necessarily your usual fare for, performance coaches or people who work on amplifying who you are. They may know the body or the voice needs to be better, but they don't have the level of, I was fortunate to have a high, high level of detailed technical expertise. So an ability to work in those areas as release points for all the other stuff. So that's it. And the five stages are very simply, I'll just batter through them.
Okay.
One is the stage of body. And that's everything, not only your body, but your voice is the channel to the world. It's your environment. It's things around you. It's the physical world. There's the stage of mind. And on the stage of mind, we ask the question, are the thoughts I'm thinking undermining me or supporting me? There's the stage of emotion, where we're dealing with heart and connection. And people want to connect with their audiences. They want to connect with a client. They want the client to feel like they understand them. Well, the place I work on that is communication with yourself first.
Okay.
Because that's where everything starts. So,
communication with yourself. You know. Okay, that's really
yeah.
important. Yeah, that's
yeah.
a point that I'm sure a lot of people could use some help with.
Absolutely. And again, unconsciously, we don't know what we're communicating to ourselves.
Right.
And the most important communication is not the one we make to other people. It's the one we make to ourselves, because that's where everything else stems from.
Mm-hmm.
When we dress in a particular way, we communicate to ourselves. When we walk or physicalize a certain way,
right.
we subconsciously communicate something to ourselves about who we believe ourselves to be.
Is that in line with, for example, assuming postures of power and so on? Because those definitely
yeah,
have
Cuddy
an effect
stuff.
On us, on how we feel emotionally and perhaps on a cellular level, assuming
Completely.
Power poses.
Completely. And, you know, here's the thing about don't wait and underestimating yourself, because I don't have any major psychology degrees. But what Amy Cuddy came out with, I mean, her stuff is unique and individual, but I was doing that 10 years ago and called it some really fancy name to compensate for me thinking I needed to, you know, it was called
yeah.
I think something like archetypal kinesthetic association, which basically meant if you take a posture, you connect to an archetype.
Right.
So, well, good for Amy, you know, but
I like that archetype. I mean, that, you know, that stands for AKA, also
oh,
known
that's
as.
Oh, wait. Thank you for pointing it out. I never
sure.
saw that. That's
yeah.
great. But yes, it does completely. And it's so funny how the arts themselves is where all this stuff originated. And I knew the moment I conceived of it that it had applications in business and it had applications all over our lives. And I had a wonderful directing teacher in college. He was ancient when I was back in college, which wasn't yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And he had directed the original version of Cyrano de Bergerac with José Ferrer. And yeah, I know. He was a real amazing guy. And so he was involved in something that a lot of people may not be aware of, which is called group theater, which is
mm-hmm.
where Lee Strasberg and Uta Hagen and all these icons 20th century acting came out of. And he said they would have a constant argument about, do I have to become angry to pound my fist? Or when I pound my fist,
okay.
do I become angry?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
they could have saved themselves the debate.
Right. Right.
Because the answer is yes.
To both.
Yep. It's bidirectional.
Right. Yes. We can feel something physically and then feel something emotionally based on how we feel physically, or we can cognitively or emotionally affect ourselves physically.
Yes, exactly. And the one caveat I would make, and this is really, you know, picking hairs or whatever they say, I want to make sure I'm going to the right place here, is that when we're talking about the physical nature of things, the kinesthetic nature of
kinesthetic,
things,
yeah.
And using that to leverage emotions that we can't shift or feelings we can't shift, we want to do them as mechanical actions devoid of meaning, separate from feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can get somebody to raise their, stick their arm out and raise it up high at an angle, and then have them speak while they're in that position, you know, arms up high, out to the sides.
Right.
I can put them in that position and say, now put your arm there. Now take your other arm and stretch it out there. And now I want you to start talking and let's have a conversation. They can do that. But if you ask them to do the opposite, they can't raise their arms while they're doing the speech or singing a song or whatever. There's lots of resistance because it's within the context that their brain has established of, well, that would look stupid in that context.
Okay. Yeah. The brain is editorializing it.
Yeah, and that's exactly what it's doing. You're absolutely right.
Well, Steve, I wanted to take a little break right now. We're going to take a commercial break. And then when we come back, you can go on telling us about the quickening and the rest of the fascinating information you have, okay?
Beautiful.
Great.
Hello, amazing listeners to the I Am Radio TV Network. We thank you so very much for being here with us today. We wanted to let you know we have an amazing opportunity coming up. We have available broadcast time. If you are a coach, author, speaker, or a business person looking to get your message out to the entire planet, then please get in touch with us as soon as possible, and we will go over the various levels of participation in our network. Again, we thank you for being with us here today on the I Am Radio TV Network. Now, get ready to go. Interactive.
Welcome back, everybody. This is the Dr. Simone Show, The Mind-Body Edge, and I'm here speaking with Stephen Memel about myriad topics about performance mastery and his experiences in the various arts and his experience working with professionals, helping very well-known professionals and individuals like executives and CEOs to improve their performance. So we left off, we were talking about how the brain can editorialize, and I think that we were going through your five stages of ultimate performance.
Yeah.
And did you mention the fourth step, the energy level?
I didn't mention the energy level yet, so...
Okay.
The stage of energy is number four, and that if you take the potential energy that you are able to generate as your, you can call it your vitality, you can call it your spirit, you can call it joie de vivre, you know, whatever you want to call it. Who cares?
Right.
That's up to you. But if you take it on a scale of 1 to 10. And we again bring up the idea of I call them even invisible patterns that control our lives and limit us.
Mm-hmm.
Most people are walking around at an unconscious 3 to 6 on that scale of 1 to 10.
Right.
They're not even aware that they have a choice. When they go either direction past those, it's usually because something propels them unconsciously to do that. But the idea of switching on the light, switching to a higher level of energy and vitality on an intentional basis, and that doesn't mean being loud or obnoxious or noisy. You can stand still and silent and radiate greater energy when you know how to leverage this. so, you know. And one of the reasons there's a fact of risk psychology that has a lot to do with this, which the reason people won't go beyond that six or maybe even seven is because we will risk more to hold on to that which we already have than
right.
risk for something greater in the future. You probably run into that again all
oh,
the time.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
I mean, that's one of the biggest issues about change.
Right.
And
right.
the fear of, you know, loss being greater than the pleasure or the desire for gain. The fear
exactly.
of loss. Which makes sense
exactly.
in terms of survival value.
Right. It does.
Yeah.
It makes total sense. And for me and my work, I think because it's so much of it, though, it also is about how you function alone, but so much of it is about in front of others. What
mm-hmm.
we're holding on to that we don't want to let go and that we'll sacrifice our greatness for, we'll sacrifice joy for, it will sacrifice greater rewards to hold on to this thing, and we call it our dignity.
Yeah. And
I'd rather
and
go
the,
unnoticed.
Okay.
Oh, you were going to say something? I'm sorry.
I was just thinking that when I said it has survival value, that I should probably explain that a little bit.
Sure.
That people have a greater fear of losing than they have the desire to gain. And this goes from everything, as you mentioned, risk management. It runs from including our finances to the general way that we live our lives. The
yeah.
fear of loss is linked with threats. And
yeah.
threats, if you look at our ancestors, of course, situations in which, for example, we would be rejected from the group, we would be tossed out of the group, or threats, for example, seeing a strange animal and all of a sudden, you know, being unfamiliar, not knowing what's going to happen, we're more wired to react to those situations because they're linked with death.
Right.
So,
no question.
The fear of loss in a way, you know, is linked with survival, and
yeah.
so it's better for us in terms of survival value to avoid the loss of things than it is to improve our state or our status. It's
absolutely.
Less risky. Yeah.
Absolutely. I couldn't be more in alignment with you on that, and I like to even bring up language like I die of embarrassment. Oh,
mm-hmm.
that would kill me, right?
Right.
It ain't
right.
an accident.
Right, exactly.
You know? But I am so on the same page with you about that. That's exact. And it's so below the radar for most of us. We just kind of tacitly accept that, yeah, this is a fearful situation. So we should be afraid.
Right.
You know,
right.
The opposite is become harsh on ourselves and judgmental because we're experiencing fear.
Right.
And that's the greatest way to reinforce fear.
Exactly. You know, we call ourselves cowardly and we have no courage and what's wrong with me again.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
yes, it does. You're right. It does reinforce that. We look at our behavior and we see this is how I reacted. So that means that I don't have courage. So that next
right.
time this happens, I'm going to react that way again because I'm
right.
afraid.
Right.
Yeah.
That doesn't make one feel too good.
No, it doesn't feel good. No.
Yeah.
And that's why coaching is so important and helping people use new words and reframe things and realize more about themselves, more going back to narrative psychology, telling themselves truer stories about themselves.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And it's, as you know, it's really an honor to yet. I mean, I truly consider it an honor, and I, you know, we haven't gotten to speak a lot, but I can tell, you know, you feel the same way, that when somebody allows you to be a part of them shifting their mm-hmm. consciousness about their perception of themselves and the world, and you watch it happen, it's an honor.
Oh, absolutely. It is. It really
is. And I think I think one of the things that's really important is, you know, we're brain geeks, right?
Mm-hmm.
We like other stuff too, but we're definitely brain geeks. So the person who's sitting there going, well, okay, so what does this have to do with me? You may be getting the idea, and it may not be too mystical, but I like to ground it in super duper, you know, reality. And I think I would say, first of all, have you ever met somebody that you posed the question to, would you like to be more confident? I don't think you've ever met somebody who you've asked that question who said, nah.
Nah. I'm fine being, you know, insecure and scared as I am.
Yeah. I mean, everybody wants to feel more self-assurance, more confidence.
Right.
Everybody wants to feel less fearful.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody. Mm-hmm. And when you find out and you discover that there are steps that you can take and that they're not massive, radical 20 years of therapy steps,
right.
but they're simple things
mm-hmm.
that you can do to shift. And I hear some people out there going, yeah, is he going to say one? Is he going to say one? You know? But I'm sure you could list off 80 of them. But when they're simple shifts, it's phenomenal what it can start a domino effect of other shifts within you.
Right.
I'll throw one at you right now.
Right.
So as you, anybody who's listening, if you notice yourself, and remember, we can't do anything about what we're unaware of, so we have to begin with noticing. So if you notice yourself walking through your day and you're doing errands or you're walking around the house and you are barreling through, head down, and you're on automatic pilot, zooming around, the minute you notice, stop. Just stop. Or one thing you can do is change your pace. Just slow it down and saunter. Let me first say that the minute you do that, you will feel a torture no less than being put on the rack. Because the entire rest of your body brain is going to be screaming at you,
right.
No, I can't walk this slowly. There's an emergency.
Right.
And the real wonderful thing is stop, especially if you find yourself getting the opportunity to stop in an inappropriate but safe place. Like, don't stop walking across a freeway. But in a parking lot where there's hardly anybody's driving, to stop
mm-hmm.
and just notice that you are standing on a spot on earth, and you look around you and allow yourself to come out of your head and take in your environment, and you even allow yourself to dwell so far on it that somebody else determined this was a parking lot. If this cement wasn't here, I'd just be standing on a spot on a ball hurling through the universe.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that is such a centering thing, just to spend a moment. And it's, why is it so powerful? It's so powerful because you are taking back control.
Exactly.
People feel like, I can't stop because X, Y, and Z. If your life is such that you can't literally stop for 30 seconds or 40 seconds, and please set a timer if you need to, so you don't have to be looking at it. If your life is built that you can't stop anytime you want for 40 seconds, you really need to do some reflection on how you're living your life.
Absolutely. Before it's too late and you burn out.
That's right.
Because if you're living like that, you will.
You will.
Yeah.
You will. There's no peace in that.
Mm-mm. And you know what you're saying, I'm sure our audience members that are aware of what mindfulness means
mm-hmm.
can relate really clearly to what you're saying.
Right.
You know, mindfulness being in the aware of the moment, being in the here and now, and allowing all of your thoughts and emotions, both negative and positive, to just sort of pass through you, let them go, and you don't judge them. You look at them, you acknowledge them, and non-judgmentally let them go, and then focus back on something else. So if you can build that, I totally agree with you about building that into your day, structuring it. I have my clients write it down, write times down in their calendars if they're having difficulty remembering to do it.
Great.
And studies have shown how greatly it improves performance in the workplace and creativity. And
absolutely.
They suggest that you take one or a couple of minutes each hour to let your mind drift or to do some mindfulness, and that increases greatly your ability to focus, concentrate, and improve creativity as well.
Exactly. And let's talk about it in the realm of performance, okay?
Mm-hmm.
What do they say somebody has who is a great performer? They've got stage
presence. Stage presence.
That's one of those other words that people go, oh, I didn't know that was connected. They are present when they're on stage.
Right.
They're not in the future. They're truly in the moment. They're receptive. They're able to absorb and experience what goes on around them. Things aren't predetermined, therefore they are open, and this is where we move towards quickening. They are open to instincts and urges that come up for them, and those can be in the form of ideas if you're a creative writer, or ideas if you're a painter. And they can come in the form of physical urges and words if you're a speaker. And I'll tell you one that happened for my guy when he did his offsite the other day. He had, in the beginning of his speech, he was talking about a little intro, welcoming people, and he said, "Sir, there's a lot of new faces here. For those of you who don't know me, I'm the new CFO. Matt, da-da-da."
Mm-hmm.
He said, "And thank you." And he turned around and walked off the stage. But he said, no, seriously. He came back. He would never in a million years have done something like that before. But because of his presence, and we discussed this, we did a big, you know, post-game analysis yesterday.
Uh-huh.
They lost the videotape. Video chip. But I'm always inquiring. I said, "Did you plan that? Or did that, like, jump out at you?" And he said, "It jumped out at me. I had no idea I was going to do that."
It's like improvisation.
Correct.
Yeah.
And my 10th key principle of the 10 key principles is spontaneity lives in freedom. you don't have to try to be spontaneous. That's an oxymoron.
Right.
What you
right.
have to do is understand how to release yourself, and a symptom of that, the outcome of releasing yourself, is spontaneous things occur to you. And you can make that a skill that you can hone and be have at your beck and call at a moment's notice, in an instant, anytime.
Interesting. That's really
so, again, how does this affect you? Did you want to say something?
No, go ahead.
Okay. Again, how does that affect you? Well, let's look at certainly if you're a creative artist, but let's say you're in conversation at a critical business meeting and some idea pops up and you know enough now not to get in its way and to follow its lead because you've got freedom. And I'm not talking about wild, I'm talking about present and understanding the creative urges that come up rather than what most people do, which is battle them away. It will give you the next thing to say. It will give you the response that is more tuned in to the person with whom you're talking, whether you're in a client meeting and you're doing, many coaches do strategy sessions.
Right.
The person you're talking to is going to feel you're more present, that they're the only person in the room, and you will be more finely responsive to the details of what they're expressing to you. And what do people want more than anything else? They want to be seen. They want to be heard. When you're involved in your stuff, you are putting a wall between your ability to be the most empathetic and the most compassionate and therefore the most interesting person on the planet in the eyes of the person to whom you're speaking.
Right. That's brilliant. I love that.
Thank you.
Yeah. It's definitely true that people want to be seen and heard and understood.
Yeah.
And I
think they really do.
That's something that, really speaks to the importance of social interaction. And we see that really not as present any longer in our everyday society because of the presence of technology and the use of the machines all the time, that actual social interaction, direct social interaction, is no longer as prominent. And that's it's a shame, but it's also dangerous because social support is one of the biggest stress buffers. And
right.
is incredibly important for our brain health and our physical health. It's people who have very low social interaction, their health is equivalent to if they were smoking, if they were heavy cigarette smokers, or if they were very obese. Their health suffers that much.
I hadn't heard that statistic. That's very interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I want to give the listeners, again, another couple of ideas of things that they can work on.
Okay, great. We have about 4 minutes.
We're getting close.
Yep.
Oh, good. So, let me give one more here.
Yeah, give them one more, and then I want to make sure that you give out your website information and other contact info.
So, I have a ritual. Like I'm on my way right now to a TV station to direct some segments. Okay, and I have a ritual I go through. I went through it before I did this show with you, which is the subtle change is from how am I doing to how can I help? What do I have to give? So I ask myself first. What am I here to communicate? So what specialized information or ideas or skills or whatever do I have that I know the people I'm speaking to probably don't or haven't considered to the degree of depth that I have? And how will that positively affect their lives so that I'm clear about what I'm there to get across and make sure they understand? Okay?
Right.
Tension's now off myself. I feel totally different.
Mm-hmm.
Second thing is a commitment. The commitment is I'm leaving this venue, this talk show, whatever, feeling good about myself no matter what happens during it. So what I'm doing is I'm taking performance off the table. I'm taking my value off the table being based on my performance. So I can be doing the worst job of my life, and all it's going to do is bring a smile to my face because I'm going to be laughing at, wow, this is going south, but I made a promise.
Right.
I'm not going to let, you know. And then sometimes
right.
when you're leaving, you have to tell your mind to shut up, you know. No,
exactly.
I'm not hearing. Anyway, that's a tip.
Wonderful. We, you know, we have to tell our minds to shut up quite often.
Don't we?
That
Don't
mental
we.
Chatter.
Yes.
Which is
yes.
why, you know, learning how to really be aware of and in charge of your thinking is so important, and why things such as meditation are so beneficial.
Yeah. Yeah. And,
we need
and,
to tell
know,
it to shut up in certain ways and speak up in other ways. Let's put it that way. Speak up more positive
right.
to ourselves, right?
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, okay,
and,
why don't you go ahead and give some information about how people can contact you?
Well, the best way is go to one of my websites. You know, I have an artist website, which probably is not mostly this audience, which is stephenmemel.com. And Stephen with a V and last name Memel, M-E-M-E-L. The other site is scienceofswitchingon.com. And if they subscribe on that site, they'll be able to download a book, an e-book, How to Inspire Action in Every Audience, which will give some practical tips on how to structure speeches better, what you want to do, because there's so much more of how the physical aspects and details of the mechanics of how you do things, what that can change in your mind, as we touched upon earlier. So it'll give you a lot of that, and I'd love it if you'd sign up and get yourself that book and be part of my community.
Yes, please do so. Go ahead and do that. So that would be www.scienceofswitchingon or the Science of Switching On?
Science of Switching On.
Okay, great. Okay, well, Stephen, I really appreciate your participating today. It's been fascinating. Our conversation has drifted all over the place, which is okay because there was a central thrust there. And it's really been a pleasure to have you on. I'm sure the audience has learned quite a bit.
Well, it's been my pleasure, and thank you, Dr. Simone, for having me.
Thank you.
And thank you, everybody.
Okay, thanks so much, Steve, and like to have you back on another time.
I'd love to join you anytime. Please let
All right,
me know.
Thanks. All right, that is going to just about wrap up the Dr. Simone Show, The Mind Body Edge. I wanted to let you know that my website is www.successbraincoach.com. And you can go to that. At present, I have a couple of spots open for complimentary strategy sessions, 30 minutes. So if you go to the website, www.successbraincoach.com, you might be one of the few who can sign up quickly and get a complimentary strategy session with me. Until next week, I say goodbye, and I wish you the best from the IM Radio TV Network. Have a fantastic day and rest of the week. Thank you so much. Goodbye.